It was a busy week in Idaho as the head of the Environmental Protection Agency made a visit to the Gem State. And there could be a special legislative session at the State House this summer. That's just naming a couple of things that made headlines this week. Joining me for our Friday Reporter Roundtable, Scott McIntosh, editor of the Press Tribune, Kimberly Crucy with the Associated Press of Idaho, and Betsy Russell, also with the Idaho Press Tribune. So welcome.
Thank you.
Happy Friday. Mm-hmm. Let's get right off and talk about Scott Pruitt's visit to Boise earlier this week. Now, he was in town with and he had a news conference of sorts with Governor Otter. He signed an agreement giving Idaho oversight of a water discharge program. So can you first talk about that, but then about the fact that he basically didn't take any questions from reporters?
He sure didn't. And the reporters were all ready with their questions.
Yeah. I mean, this was a pretty low-profile visit. I mean, there was not a lot of heads-up warning. You know, I was getting texts from sources like, hey, have you heard about this? I mean, it was not on the governor's schedule. So when he was here, we kind of had to scramble to kind of figure out, you know, Scott Pruitt has been in the news a lot lately. Mm-hmm. over mattresses, Chick-fil-A. Several items that I think a lot of people are interested in talking to him about. But this was a pretty also a monumental announcement and signing of turning over Idaho's Idaho is one of four states that had the EPA in charge of its overseeing its pollution discharge program permitting. And now Idaho will be joining the majority of states in managing that oversight. This has been a longstanding effort by the state that started several years ago. They had to hire, kind of expand government a little bit to hire more state employees, funnel more money to make this happen. But advocates say that this is really going to help Idaho kind of respond to on-the-ground issues that maybe some of the bureaucrats, you know, back east wouldn't understand as much, which is why a lot of states like having kind of being in charge of this program.
So, Betsy, is that why it's so important, is being able to, you know, be in charge of that?
Well, yeah, and there was a lot of really strong industry support for this change in Idaho. And the legislation that passed in 2014 to take this step and to start phasing it in really was pushed by industry because a lot of businesses in Idaho, although there are also a lot of municipalities and others who go through this permitting system, say that they find it easier to deal with the Idaho Department of Environmental Quality than with the federal U.S. EPA. And so the signing, while it seems momentous, it's been quite a number of years in process, and it now launches yet another four-year phase-in period. Municipal permits will start being issued by the state right away on July 1st, and then the industrial ones follow, and then the stormwater, and so on. And there's still several years of phase-in. It's a significant change for Idaho, but Pruitt's personal visit gave it a much higher profile. And while the governor had announced he would have a signing, he hadn't announced that Pruitt would be there. And so the word got out.
Yeah. And this wasn't on Pruitt's schedule either.
I was going to say, why in the world would Pruitt come to Idaho for a signing like this?
Well, this is kind of in line with the Trump administration's almost a showing that states are can work with the federal government under the new administration and have kind of like it's a way to kind of promote that states will have more flexibility. So this is kind of like the first monumental agreement that he can come in and kind of show that, yeah, like this administration is willing to work more with states.
So then let's talk about the fact that really Governor Otter and Scott Pruitt, after the signing, I mean, they pretty much just up and left, and Pruitt didn't take any questions from reporters. And on the day that he was here, I mean, there were more questions that had just come up in the national media about Pruitt's spending.
Absolutely. I mean, he is the target of more than a dozen investigations into spending, conflicts of interest, ethics questions, and a very big one had just broken that very day, that he had actually tasked his executive scheduler at the EPA to set up a meeting between himself and the president and CEO of Chick-fil-A in order to secure a franchise for his wife. And also in that same story, which was in the Washington Post, it said that he had also similarly used his position to contact the head of a nonprofit and seek a position for his wife, who then subsequently was paid $2,000 to organize that group's national convention, at which Pruitt was the keynote speaker. So these are pretty major revelations that are coming out, and a lot of people wanted to ask him about it, probably all over the country, as well as in that room there with Governor Otter, and he wasn't sticking around for those questions.
And in fact, Kimberly, I think we kind of heard you I don't know if I want to say yelling, but you were definitely...
No, I was yelling.
You were yelling. Okay, you said it. You were yelling.
I was yelling. And I mean... it was just essentially there was me and Melissa Dapple and a couple other reporters where, you know, that's kind of how you have to, you know, the director of DEQ was talking, and we wanted to make sure that we could at least say we tried to ask these questions about why are you using personal aids for some personal gain, or can you respond to these allegations? You have such a little bit of an opportunity, and just trying to,
right,
like, you know, hold our officials accountable. That was you had a brief window to do that, and that's why the yelling.
And was there any response from him at all, or was it just out the door?
No, I mean, how the room was positioned, the podium is just a couple steps to the side door where they just shot out of. So,
and they shot
several
out
several seconds.
Yeah. I'm speaking with Scott McIntosh, editor of the Idaho Press Tribune, Kimberly Crusi with the Associated Press of Idaho, and Betsy Russell with the Idaho Press Tribune. If you have questions for our panel, of course, you can always ask them. Go to idahomatters@boisestate.edu. We will do our best to get to those questions. Also wanted to talk next about a potential special legislative session coming up. Betsy, set the scene as to why this may even be a possibility.
Sure. The issue is water rights in the Treasure Valley. And while the issues are a bit arcane because water law is very complicated, it has to do with who has the rights to the water that is in the reservoirs just east of Boise and flows down the Boise River, and who has the rights to it when. And there have been fights and fights and fights in court and in administrative proceedings for a number of years over this. And a settlement is emerging among some of the various parties to try to settle, you know, what happens when there's a flood year and they release water early, and do the farmers who need it later still have a right to get it, and questions like those. And so the settlement agreement has been brokered by House Speaker Scott Begke. And he came up with 3 points that would satisfy the concerns of all the parties on all sides. And 2 of them could be covered under existing law through going to the water court and requesting decrees on water rights. But the 3rd one actually requires legislation. And that's a change in the priority for rights to water in those situations where there's floods and where new water storage facilities are proposed. So do the new water storage facilities, where do their rights fit in with the existing water rights? You would think Idaho law already takes care of this because we're a first-in-time, first-in-right state. But there's a legislative proposal out there, and Speaker Begke has asked legislators from both houses and both parties about the idea of a special session, and they unanimously endorsed a request to the governor to call a special session. Now, only the governor can call a special session in the legislature, and he has not yet said what he's going to do, but he has said he's going to meet with the speaker and pro tem and take a look at this and make a decision.
And I think it's just quickly, you know, Speaker Begke and the water users have been very quick to say all stakeholders are 100% on board. We have not heard that yet from the Attorney General's office. He has declined to comment when asked, is that characteristic correct? And he has said no comment. The Water Department director has said, I'm going to stay neutral on this. I think he told you that maybe the characterization might have gone a little too far, Betsy. Is that correct?
Right. Yeah. There were some senses at the legislative hearing that everybody's given their blessing on this, even the Department of Water Resources. And the department's director, Gary Spackman, said, well, that might have gone a little further than where I'm willing to go right now. And he said that he is not opposing the legislation. Mm-hmm. He is not supporting it, but he does think it should have a full airing.
Now, what about this idea? Because there's June 20th. Isn't there something going to the Idaho Supreme Court about this? And because Bill Manning last week, when we did our reporter roundtable with the Idaho Statesman, had mentioned something about waiting until it goes to the Supreme Court before you decide something. Am I correct in that thinking? Or I may have it backwards a little bit.
Well, there are oral arguments scheduled before the Idaho Supreme Court on June 20th on a whole bunch of different appeals and cross appeals that play into this. And the idea of the settlement, I think from Speaker Begke's perspective, is to head off the need for that. Mm. And so he has asked all the parties in those appeals as a gesture of good faith to file a motion to vacate that hearing and put that off in favor of what might come out of a special session this summer.
There's a couple fears right now. You have to remember the makeup of the Supreme Court right now is 5 justices, but 2 of which Justice Brody will have to recuse herself because of her involvement in the
because
of her prior involvement in water cases. We also have an open Judge Stigner hasn't been appointed yet. So there will be 2 like interim judges in there. That kind of throws a wrench into all of this because you can't really play look into the tea leaves and see how, you know, these players will look. The second thing is I'm losing my point here. I mean, forgive me. Anyway, so right now, the basically, they're really worried about how the court makeup is. And, oh, I remember my point. I apologize. The second thing is that they are worried how the court rules could upend prior water allocation. And they would prefer to do that through a settlement and not upend decades of water law, which is like
right.
Betsy correctly
But we're
said.
Looking at, so it's June 8th. Today. Mm-hmm. So we're looking at June 20th. So this has to go before the governor quickly, because if they want to vacate those oral arguments, they have to do that. I mean, we're less than 2 weeks away, if I'm doing math correctly in my head, mm-hmm. and then put this session in place.
Right. And so the process for calling a special session, actually, it can be done fairly quickly. We were talking before the program here. I was once surprised while on vacation in Hawaii that the legislature called a special mm-hmm. session on a very limited issue.
When
a
half-day
session. And so once the governor issues the call, it's a matter of logistics, bringing them back to town. It's not uncommon for a special session of the legislature to be one day or even less.
So this could be a very quick session.
It could be quick, but it seems unlikely that it would occur before June 20th. It's more likely that it would occur in the next month or two, just to give the time for those logistics of getting all those legislators from all over the state back to Boise mm-hmm. for an unplanned trip.
Welcome back. We are taking a look at the news that made headlines around the Gem State this week. And we continue our reporter roundtable with Betsy Russell with the Idaho Press, Kimberly Crusi with the Associated Press of Idaho, and Scott McIntosh, editor of the Idaho Press. Want to start with you, Scott, and let's talk about these fireworks, I guess, new ordinances that are coming along about if you're a vendor, kind of watch out.
Sure. Well, so I'll try to give the Cliff's Notes version of this. But there is a state law in Idaho called the Fireworks Act of 1997. And basically that bans certain fireworks in the state of Idaho, namely aerial fireworks that shoot higher than 20 feet in the air or 15 feet in diameter. But in Idaho, we have this interesting situation where vendors are selling illegal fireworks as long as the buyers will sign a piece of paper, a waiver that says,
I promise I won't shoot them off in Idaho.
And then, of course, as we all know, they go home and set up their lawn chairs in their front yard and shoot them off. So this has always been a point of contention. And maybe Betsy can correct me if I'm misremembering this, but Representative Matt Erpelding last year had asked the Attorney General's office for an opinion on the sale of illegal fireworks. And the Attorney General's office issued this opinion that kind of got leaked out, you know, just before 4th of July, saying that no, illegal fireworks are illegal and you can't sell them. So sales of illegal fireworks are illegal. And nothing really happened because a lot of law enforcement agencies said, well, you know, this is just an opinion and we're not going to change anything. And so here it is a year later. Law enforcement agencies have had a whole year to think about this. And we did a story last week in the Idaho Press, and the law enforcement agencies were saying, no, we're just going to keep on doing what we were doing all along. Well, this week, Boise Fire Chief Dennis Doan, who is not known for mincing words or pulling punches, he said, well, you know what? If you buy illegal fireworks, set them off and set a fire, we're going to come after you for restitution. But not only that, we're going to go after the people who sold those illegal fireworks and ask for restitution. So if we have a similar incident this year that we had 2 years ago, the Table Rock mm-hmm. fire was caused by an illegal firework. And we also had a house fire, a house burned down to the ground in Nampa because of an illegal firework. If we have that situation again, I would suspect that the Boise Fire Department would seek restitution. And they did seek restitution of $400,000 from the young man who set the fire on Table Rock 2 years ago mm-hmm. To the tune of $400,000. So it'll be interesting to see how that develops and whether that would hold up in court if they go after the seller of an illegal fireworks.
Well, and when the Attorney General's office had that opinion, they got some backlash. Did they, Betsy?
They certainly did. It caused a big hullabaloo when that opinion came out, because basically it was saying that what we have been doing in Idaho since that law passed was wrong and was illegal. And the Attorney General's office didn't comment initially on the opinion to clarify it. And so some counties sheriffs said, well, we're going to crack down. We're going to shut down those places that are selling bottle rockets. And others said, well, we don't know. And so then a few days later, the Attorney General's office issued a clarification.
Right.
And the clarification just basically said, this is just an Attorney General's opinion. This isn't a change in the law, because a lot of people said, oh, the law's changed, and the legislature hadn't acted. And there have been attempts in the legislature to change that law, supported by Boise Fire Chief Dennis Stone, and the legislature hasn't acted. The loophole that they've created is under a clause in the law that says this doesn't apply to wholesale sale of fireworks. So, you know, if we have a fireworks manufacturer in Idaho who's importing or exporting those out of state, we're not going to get in the way of business here. But we, you know, these are illegal to have and use in Idaho. So it just it doesn't make sense. It doesn't quite work. And we still have this hybrid situation where we say they're illegal, but they are being sold in what appears to be a legal manner. And then when they're set off, that's illegal. And so Dennis Stone has thrown really a new wrench into the debate by saying he's going to go after the vendors. And that may well cause the vendors to think twice about the liability that they have for selling those items.
And from a legal standpoint, though, can they? They're talking about getting restitution, not necessarily prosecuting.
Right, because they spend money fighting these fires. They go out and they have trucks and manpower putting these fires out. And so, you know, I don't think the Boise Fire Department has prosecutorial authority, but they could ask to get restitution for their costs.
Kimberly?
I'm just really fascinated by the legislature's response to this. I'm curious to see if we'll see any you know, maybe legislation proposals in 2019 to see to clarify this, or as a pushback to make it ban
that. And what I've heard is that, and that's what they say, they come back and say, well, we don't need any more laws because the law already exists on the books, so we don't need to write a new law. And I suspect that's what Matt Erpelding was right. doing, was thinking about whether he needed to propose some legislation. And according to the Attorney General's office, no, you don't need another law.
Except people are still setting them off. Mm-hmm. So there's that. Let's talk about Senator Jim Risch's appearance on national NPR earlier this week. Betsy, you wrote on your blog about this.
Yes.
And he talked about the upcoming summit between Trump and Kim of North Korea, as well as really kind of being pretty heavy hitting on our European allies.
Absolutely. And for anyone familiar with Jim Risch here in Idaho, these were not particularly surprising comments, but perhaps those looking at national and international relations might have been taken a little bit aback at the really hard line that he was taking toward our European allies on Iran and kind of the tough talk that he was giving. And he also had a very full-throated defense of President Trump and everything that he's doing, pretty much saying that any criticisms essentially are part of the hate and vitriol from the other side in Washington, D.C. Very pointed comments from our senator. He, of course, is in line to become the next chairman of the Senate Foreign Relations Committee if the Republicans hold the Senate in the upcoming midterm elections. And so this was a big step out on the national stage for Senator Risch, and I think he did make waves. I thought it was interesting that just a day before that, a Senate committee on which he serves, the Senate Energy and Natural Resources Committee, held a special hearing on the upcoming fire season. And of course, that's a big deal here in Idaho, and that very day, there were four wildfires reported in the Boise BLM district showing that the fire season has started. Senator Risch skipped that hearing.
Really?
And the when I asked why, he was needed for another hearing. And he's been briefed on the fire season many times. In some senses, it seems that he is rising up to the international level now, our senator from Idaho. So it'll be very interesting to see what we see from him.
Well, and what was interesting about it, you're completely right, Betsy, that, you know, if you're familiar with Idaho, his comments were nothing that surprised, I think, an Idahoan.
Right.
But if you're not from Idaho, this was the national stage. How do you think that could have been received from other audiences?
I did talk with a couple of political scientists about this, and Senator Risch may be playing to other senators to try to establish his credibility as a potential foreign relations chairman, showing that, yes, I'm on top of these issues. I'm a tough talker. I'm someone to be reckoned with on these issues. On the other hand, just a few weeks ago, he had another very high-profile incident in the Senate in which he held up the budget bill in a dispute over naming a wilderness area in Idaho over Cecil Andrus, after Cecil Andrus, who was a longtime political foe of Senator Risch. And in the end, he was unsuccessful at that, and it did not go over well at all.
No. I mean, it made headlines that he probably didn't want to have make headlines.
Particularly for someone who is attempting to ascend to a very high-profile role as Senate Foreign Relations Chairman. So perhaps this is the other attempt to build that credibility.
It's going to be interesting to see how that all plays out. Scott, I want to talk a little bit about an opinion piece that you wrote in the Idaho Press recently. Very personal piece. And about 2 weeks ago, we did a segment here on the program about colon cancer and the need for early detection. And in fact, the American Medical Association just came out with a recommendation to lower the age of getting screened for that. Tell me about the opinion you wrote and why you decided to write this.
So, you know, on a personal matter, I was diagnosed with colon cancer when I was 33 years old, so very, very young. And I've written about it before. I'm very open about it because I do think that people should get screened very early. I got very, very lucky. I did not have any symptoms whatsoever. I was changing doctors and my wife and I were getting ready to have our second son. And, you know, I wanted to get a clean bill of health. Mm-hmm. And so I went to this doctor and he ordered a whole battery of tests. And really, I mean, it just really seemed crazy to me at the time. But he did a screening test for colon cancer. And it did come up with microscopic traces of blood. Like I said, I had no symptoms.
You had no symptoms. You were so young.
I was a very healthy 33-year-old young man, and I had a sigmoidoscopy. They found a polyp, and then that triggered a colonoscopy. So then I did a colonoscopy, and they found another polyp, and they found a cancerous tumor. Now, fortunately, it was stage one. They caught it very early. I had surgery to remove it, and here I am today. And in the past 14 years, I just see so many stories of young people dying of colon cancer. Brian Olson, mm-hmm. there's a golf tournament that St. Luke's helps put on. Young man, 39 years old, wife and two young children when he died. The wife of the pastor at the Baptist Church in Cuna, she died right around the same time. And so I'm very attuned to that. Right. And so my message is just, you know, go get screened and talk to your doctor about it.
And Dr. Zuckerman, who came in from St. Luke's a couple of weeks ago, said that research has shown it's about 10 years that you could mm-hmm. be, you would have this, but it could take upwards of 10 years to actually have symptoms. So the screening used to be, the recommendation was the age of 50, mm-hmm. and I believe they lowered it to, was it 45?
45, right. And so they think that will catch about 90% of the early onset cancers. So, you know, I'm very rare that I had it at 33. Mm-hmm. And so of those cases that are 50 and under, they think that screening before at 45 we'll catch 90% of those early wow. onset cancers.
I really appreciate you talking about it. We had a ton of listener feedback about that, and so I'm hoping that people are listening and getting screened. I'm making my husband go in and get it done, whether he likes it or not.
Good.
But I would like to thank all three of you. It's always great to have you guys in and talk about the issues of the day, especially what's been going on this week. We'll have to wait to see if we have a special session, and then we'll be talking about that. My guests today include Scott McIntosh, editor of the Idaho Press, Kimberly Crusoe with the Associated Press of Idaho, and Betsy Russell with the Idaho Press.